Welcome to Sports Weekly with Ayaz Memon.
Hello, everybody. It's the Olympics here. And as a result, I, Mr. Fantastic, have gotten an upgrade or a promotion, however you look at it. But jokes apart, Ayaz is running around, catching all the action happening all over the world to make it concise and bring it to you. And yes, he is here, as is Saumil. Welcome, guys. Happy to be here again.
Thank you, Mr. Fantastic. Happy to be on the show. You're right. I'm a bit frazzled. You're just running around trying to keep up with all the games as part of my professional assignment. But there's nothing like the Olympics, let me tell you that. And while it's not been so far extremely gratifying for India, I think it's just been, for me personally, a whole lot of fun and excitement.
Absolutely. And to be honest, we started off on a positive note over the weekend, didn't we? Mirabai Chanu getting our first medal, a silver. Some reports presently coming in say that it could become a gold if the current winner fails a dope test. But, well, let's at least celebrate her silver, which is confirmed for now.
That was a fantastic achievement, Mr. Fantastic, if I might put it, might have a play on words there. She flopped badly in the 2016 Rio Games, you know. And one of her problems was that in the snatch, because she just flopped in all three chances at the snatch in 2016. So she's worked so hard on that. She's bettered her best, so to speak, in the snatch. And, you know, clean and jerk was her strength. She's improved on those, on the weights there. And she's come up with a very impressive silver medal winning effort here. I think this is a remarkable achievement for many reasons. One is her own story. Mirabai Chanu, as we know, she comes from a very humble background, one of six children, carrying logs of wood to kind of pitch in for the family resources, helping out. And that actually got her into sport because some talent scout saw her there and said, okay, why don't you try weightlifting? Now, my point is this. One is her own story is remarkable. At the age of 26, she's won a silver medal. And the other is, I know Karnam Maleswari won a medal in weightlifting some 16 years ago. But for Indian women to shine in sport like MC Mary Kom in boxing, Mirabai Chanu in weightlifting, the Fogart sisters in wrestling. So we had Banwar Devi in the Olympics this time in fencing. Now, these are not sports traditionally associated with women in India. These are very, for want of a better word, these are very offbeat sports for women. Generally, women are not encouraged to participate in sports. And here are these women going out and really performing excellently. And that shows you the reservoir of talent which exists. If we tap this talent, you know, and we've talked about it once in the past, that if your female participation in sports in India is less than 6-7% as a societal kind of paradigm, then you are actually keeping out almost 50% of the population from sports. And how do you then expect to become a sporting nation? If you look at the medals tally of the Chinese and the Americans over the last few Olympics, you'll find that they end up with close to 200 medals each, and 50%, if not a little more, come from the women. And in India, in the last, I was doing a bit of a calculation, in the last 25 years since Leander Pace's bronze medal in the Atlanta Games, I think we've got 15 individual medals, of which 6 have come from women. That is 40%. So look at the lopsided achievement, in a sense that women in sport in India are so few, yet the number of medals that they've won is so many as a ratio. So I think there's food for thought there. This is something that we need to understand. It's not just about the sports ministry or the sports federations. It's also at a societal level, community, and at an individual family level. Please don't hold the girl child, you know, just don't rein them in. Let them out. Let them play sport.
Absolutely. And following that piece of good news was also a very strong performance by the Indian hockey team against New Zealand, the men's team that is, winning 3-2. But what followed, which was on Sunday, was carnage. 7-1 loss to Australia. I don't think we're that bad a team, Ayaz.
Well, we shouldn't have been that bad. I thought that, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. We can say that India were listless, purposeless, out of form, etc., etc. The other way of looking at it was Australia were bloody damn good here. They just put in a bionic performance. In the first two quarters, if you have 4 goals up, you played extremely poorly, which I didn't think happened in the first two quarters. India were a decent side till then. And as it happens in the next two quarters, while the number of goals from Australia went down, they actually were in a far more commanding, they put in a far more commanding performance. They had more possession of the ball. They were always, you know, threatening to score more goals. 7-1 is a massive, massive defeat. And, you know, beating New Zealand was a good start, but losing so badly to Australia, could have a dent on the psyche. Because as I understand it, 6, 7, 8 teams in these Olympics, it's a fairly open kind of a tournament. But if one team like Australia comes and thumps you so badly, then you don't even have in the Olympics time to lick your wound, so to speak, and recover completely. I hope they do. Let's see how they perform in the next match. It'll tell us what the damage has been caused or not.
Absolutely. I mean, next up for this team is Argentina, Spain, and Japan. And Argentina and Spain, both we know are extremely strong. So it's going to be tough going, but that's what the Olympics is all about. The best in the world are the ones you have to beat to get your medals. Moving on to table tennis, Monica Batra showed flashes. She had a very strong win over her Ukrainian opponent, who was seeded 20th, but has now lost. And everything happening around her, I think, was just a distraction, isn't it? Her personal coach not being allowed to be courtside with her. And as a result, she also then refused the national coach that had traveled with her. I mean, can't we take care of all of these things before we end up at the Olympics?
Good question. I think there's a controversy brewing there. We'll have to wait and see. There's going to be obviously the official explanation, and then there will be stories, and we have to just wait and see, because I don't want to jump the gun here. But it does seem odd that Monica Batra, who's your most promising paddler, is there, and she doesn't have a coach in her corner, so to speak, when she's on the floor playing perhaps the most important match of her life as yet. But the good part is that she reached the second round. Not many have gone this far in table tennis from India. So, and she's young. She put in a very good performance in the preceding round, you know, coming from behind to win. And she's got poise. I think she's very gritty. You can see her when she clenches her fist and grits her teeth, and she digs deep and comes up with answers to challenges. And that's a good sign. And she's got pretty much age on her side. But, you know, and this is a big but, as I keep saying, Indian sport has also been renowned, alas and alack, for all kinds of unsavory things that happen off the arenas, off the sporting arena. It may have nothing to do with how a player performs, or it may have everything to do with how a player performs because of what is happening behind the scenes. So, you know, she had a personal coach there who wasn't allowed because maybe there were standard operating procedures in the pandemic times, didn't permit him to be there. But nobody being there, not even the chief coach, it seems, you know, at the very least, very odd.
Absolutely. And an unnecessary controversy on such a big stage where she actually is the full package. She's got the temperament, she's got the skill, and it's just a distraction, I think, which has let her down. But quite an unfortunate time for something like this to happen. You know, among other results to celebrate, we have MC Mary Kom, who's carrying the flag forward as she has for so many years. She had a closely fought win over her opponent from the Dominican Republic. Manish Kaushik had a very close bout that he lost to his British opponent, and he showed why he was a bronze medalist at the World Championships. It was a bout that could have gone either way, but he showed himself up very well there. Unfortunately, the Indian shooters, who were highly celebrated and everyone expected a medal from them, have disappointed and I think all but crashed out. There are no more medal hopes left in the shooting games, are there for us?
Well, I think there are in the individual events, but you're right. I mean, shooting, you know, there was a count being done by, you know, many experts, and there was a study, and one study predicted 16 or 17 medals for India, another said 12. Mainly, it seemed that most people were confident that we would at least touch double figures in the medals tally this time. And that was based or predicated on the assumption that we'd get 4, if not 5 medals in shooting. That was our strongest discipline going into the Olympics. And that now does not seem likely at all. If you get 2, it'll be a great thing from here. But if you get 1 also, it'll add to the tally. But certainly that the prospects of reaching double figures looks extremely dim as we speak. I must just mention here that in boxing, before just starting the show, Ashish Kumar has also lost his bout. So that leaves Amit Pangal. He's certainly a prospect. Mary Kom, you mentioned, I thought she had a very interesting first bout against the lady from Dominican Republic. Mary Kom, 37, 38 years of age. One of the few mothers, so to speak, in the tournament. Saina Mirza, of course, is one. So the Indian contingent had 2 young mums there. She put up a blistering assault on her opponent, knowing that if she was defensive, then she would be in trouble against a much younger opponent. So she went on the attack. Barring maybe the first round, she was a little trying to suss out things, get the measure of her opponents, how she moving, getting her own feet, the blood, you know, flowing in her veins and in her legs and in her body. just warming up. And then the next two rounds, she was absolutely fantastic. But she's got some tough matches coming up in the subsequent round. So she's had a great start, but it's going to get tougher and tougher from here for Mary.
Absolutely. Some of the other remaining medal hopes for India are with PV Sindhu and whatever the athletics individuals events have to throw up. I want to take a minute, Ayaz, and ask you a question. You know, over the last couple of days, we've seen a few close losses. We saw Sathya lose his table tennis game after leading 3-1. We saw Mirza and Raina lose their tennis match after leading 6-0, 5-3, and probably 30-15 or something. What is it? I mean, you're there, you can't close out that game on a stage like this. Is there a coaching lack here? Is it a lack of confidence amongst players in general? How do you counter something like this?
Well, look, the stage is such, the Olympics, it's a very demanding stage. I mean, it's a very high-pressure situation. So that's one factor, certainly. Even in terms of the coach, I don't know who's the tennis coach. You're right. I mean, you know, who was the coach there? And I thought the most disappointing performance of the defeat has been both these. Of course, Sathya and Gyanasekaran lost to a player ranked below him. And after getting a 3-1 lead, I'd seen an interview of him put up by the broadcasters and he looked very confident. He's a very enthused young man. And I thought this guy will at least go a couple of rounds, you know, but he just flopped in the first match. And the most disappointing, perhaps, of all these events has been the women's tennis doubles, where Sanya and Ankita won 6-0 the first set and 5-3 up in the second. Sanya is serving for the set. They go on to lose that and then lose 10-8 in the tiebreaker. So extremely disappointing. And I think what happened, it seems inexplicable. Now, Sanya, she got only one out of her 8 first serves in, you know, and her second serve is rather weak. So if Sanya is not getting a first serve in, it actually means the opponents are going to get the upper hand. And that's my analysis. That, I think, is what happened. But before that, in the 6-0, till India were 5-3 up, she had played her guts out. She was actually covering up for some of the mistakes being made by Ankita. And then suddenly, you know, she's off the boil. So one of those really big defeats which demands explanation but is inexplicable to me.
This one will hurt. This will hurt the players more than the fans, to be very honest, because they had it. They really had it. Well, speaking of players who have shockingly lost, just continuing with tennis, Ashley Barty, world number one and Wimbledon champion as recently as 2 weeks ago, or three maybe, has been knocked out in the first round. I think that's as good an explanation as any about the pressure of representing your country and the whole fact about playing at the Olympics. It's a different ballgame than what you're used to usually on the circuit, let's say.
Absolutely. I mean, Ash Barty losing the first round, for many, would be the upset of the game so far. Because some of the other big names are not around in tennis. You know, some have pulled out, especially in the men. Andy Murray being one of the latest one in the singles. He's going to play the doubles. But, you know, the Olympics can be queer. You can produce some queer results. I mean, Federer has never won the Olympic gold. He's won in doubles, but not in singles. Murray has won twice the Olympic medal. So, the pressure of the situation, sometimes just, you know, an opponent who never say die, these things can make a result topsy-turvy. Having said that, you're right. I mean, India's doubles result is a real disappointment. I must also mention here, it's not just in tennis and table tennis with Sathyan. Also, I thought we mentioned about the shooting. You know, some of our shooters were world, you know, top ranked. They've been winning world championships. Deepika is in the archery. And there again, in the team events, you know, they've done extremely well in the run-up to the Olympics, but they haven't been able to do well in the Olympics. And this is not the first time. You know, archery has been, in the past couple of Olympics, I can remember, the archers seem to struggle at the Olympics for some reason, not so much in the World Championships.
Let's hope that some of the remaining athletes can salvage some pride, some medals for us as we continue to root for them. Moving on from Tokyo and back home, closer home rather, India's engaged in Sri Lanka and they've had it fairly easy winning the first two ODIs. Although the second ODI was nothing short of an epic win with number 8 Deepak Chahar rescuing the team from an almost hopeless position, 165 or something for 6. There seemed no hope, 100 more to get almost. And well, he just finishes it with, I think, 5 balls to spare. That was quite a fight back there, wasn't that, I guess?
It was. And it shows that at least the bowlers who are emerging or coming up have put themselves to getting a good feel of batting also. Because to get into the team and not being able to bat is actually maybe costing you your place. Now, I know that the current Indian team has Jasprit Bumrah, Mohammad Shami, you know, some of these guys who don't make any runs at all. But everybody can't be a Bumrah or a Mohammad Shami or a Mohammad Siraj. And even I would venture to say that even Bumrah, Shami and Mohammad Siraj and Ishant must learn to put up 40. I mean, if you don't put up those 35, 40, 50 runs at the end, the last four wickets, you end up losing crucial matches like we did in the World Test Championship against New Zealand, where their bowlers put up 50 plus runs and we could put up, what, 12 runs in the first innings, 14 in the second. So this is a good sign that Deepak, you know, scored this. He's got actually a marvelous half century. This was a match that India had lost. But my thing here is, let's not exult too much. We won that one day ODI series 2-1. And remember, it wasn't the strongest Sri Lankan team.
Well, it wasn't even the strongest Indian team, to be honest.
Yeah, but you know, this Indian team had a lot of players who were experienced in ODIs. I mean, your most inexperienced players were somebody like Prithvi Shaw, who got his cap in this series. But Prithvi Shaw has been around for 4 or 5 years, played international cricket for India in test matches. You know, you had Varun Chakravarti playing his first match. You actually had Ishan Kishan and Surya Kumar Yadav playing their first matches, but they've been around. You know, the point I'm trying to make is Sri Lanka lost 5-6 players because of COVID, a breach in the COVID protocol. And by their body language, they seem to be like, you know, we are going to lose, so let's try and lose as honorably as we can rather than win it.
Yeah, fairly defeatist. I understand. I don't think the coach was very thrilled with their performance either on field.
He wasn't. You know, I think he was quite aghast. He got into an extended, at least, conversation with the captain. And, you know, so I think Sri Lanka need to get somebody who's a bit of a, shows a little more bravado. But I don't mean bravado in terms of just playing strokes, which can get into recklessness, but bravado and self-belief. You believe that you can win. Because Absolutely. If you don't believe you can win, you can't beat this Indian team.
Yep. Well, they did fight back to win the third ODI, but the whole series was gone by then. Nonetheless, I think that'll make them feel good and give them some confidence moving into the T20 series. Unfortunately, the first match of which they've already lost. And I think they're actually playing against a team that is more T20 oriented than any other team that we've ever sent anywhere. Because most of the players who are in the side are by virtue of their IPL performances, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like the best of IPL being there in Sri Lanka now. But I must tell you what I feel, or my understanding. If you see the approach, and especially in the batting, so there is a big tussle for getting maybe a one bowling place between Yuzvendra Chahal and Kuldeep Yadav and young Rahul Chahar. One place, when I mean for the World T20 World Cup, which is going to come up. So maybe about 12, 13 places are already filled up there. Maybe 2 places or 3 places are open. And look at the top order batsmen. They were going hell for leather, from Prithvi Shaw to Ishan Kishan to Surya Kumar Yadav. They're just coming out there and going slam bang in. I think it's not just about the effort to win the match, of course it is, but also to impress the selectors and Kohli and Shastri sitting in England and watching perhaps or following these matches. Hey, we belong in the T20 World Cup team. I think that has weighed very heavily on the minds of these boys. And I think Dravid has done a smart thing by allowing them that, you know, not reining them in and giving them enough opportunities to say, okay, you want to prove yourself, go out and do it. And then let's see what happens. So somebody like a Manish Pandey hasn't done himself any good by the way he batted in the opportunities that he's got. Shikhar Dhawan has held his own because he's been the anchor. He's played extremely well. But the race is for maybe one spot between Ishan Kishan, Surya Kumar Yadav and Prithvi Shaw. Now, as we talk, I understand that Prithvi Shaw and Surya Kumar Yadav have been called up to England to join the test squad because, you know, Avesh Khan is injured and so is Washington Sundar and so is Shubman Gill. So they're going to be part of the squad, which is, in a sense, telling you how closely these two guys are being watched and they want them to be part of a team or a group which might be playing the World T20.
Well, while that whole squad finds itself, and it's going to be interesting to see how these replacements flying in from Sri Lanka settle into England. They'll have to go through the whole quarantine process again, I assume. So it's going to take a little while for them. And Ajinkya Rahane's fitness is currently under a bit of a cloud. So with the first test not too far away now, it's going to be interesting to see who actually turns up on the field for India to play in the first test match. While all this is happening, have you found any time to catch any of the 100 action?
I haven't in the sense of watching it, except for some clips on social media and on my laptop if I can. But I'm what I was interested in more was, A, how did the rules go down? You know, the tweaks and twists in the rules that they've implemented, 5 ball overs, a bowler can bowl 10 balls at a stretch, stuff like that, change of ends which are being allowed by the rules, and also whether the audiences were lapping it up, whether it had caught on. Because England can be a very conservative society where you've been messing around or tweaking the rules for cricket may be concerned. They are still so old school in many ways. Though they won the ODI World Cup, which was their biggest triumph in like maybe 35, 40, 50 years.
But I would say in all time for cricket. They've never won anything otherwise.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so I think that by all accounts, the people are there. They're coming in droves. And I think one factor may be that, look, England is opening up and people are just yearning or straining to get out of their homes and be at some action, you know, go and watch. Like we saw it happen in Euro soccer. So they've been kind of at all the cricket grounds, families coming out, kids, parents, guardians, friends. And it seems to be going down very well with the people. And I think what's an added attraction is that the women's competition is happening simultaneously under the same names. So it's like having a Mumbai Indians men's team and a Mumbai Indians women's team, both playing the same tournament.
I think it's time that that happened anyways, but that's for another time.
Yeah.
Well, Saumil, I think you've caught some of the action, haven't you? What do you think?
I think it's not bad. It's fun to watch. I haven't quite been able to see the game properly because it's not been on national TV, but as far as I can tell from the clips, there's a great sense of excitement surrounding it. The rules are different. And of course, as I was mentioned, a pack house right there as well. It's not bad. I think I enjoyed what I saw, but I still need to see more of it to be on one side of it. Let's put it that way. It's okay for now.
All right. One thing that we know for sure that you do watch is Formula E. And what's the big news coming from there?
Oh, absolutely. And at last, Mahindra Racing have won after many, many years. I think it's been a couple of seasons since that has happened. And the first time since the team was completely restructured on the back end. And I'm so glad. In the London Epre recently, Alex Lynn won the second race. And it was under slightly controversial circumstances, because Audi's Lucas Degrassi tried to exploit a loophole in the rules. Now, what happened was that there was a safety car in the race and Degrassi was in P8. So he said, okay, let me use a rule which says that if you go in the pit lane, you have to stop in your box and then you can head out there regardless of how long the stop was. And essentially, the London pit lane was far, far shorter than all the other pit lanes in Formula E. By the way, this was the first ever indoor-outdoor racing circuit. Sounds crazy, right? Because it really was. So Degrassi came in there, he stopped for half a millisecond and went past. And he got into the lead of the race. And essentially from there, it was an easy drive for him until the race organizers and the race stewards, they said, well, that's illegal. You didn't stop at all. And there was an amazing moment where the team principal of the Audi team was running towards the stewards saying that, guys, this is legal. He stopped right there. But they checked the data. They found out that he hadn't stopped for long enough, which is why he got disqualified and Mahindra Racing's Alex Lynn won the race. It is so awesome. And by the way, it is so amazing to see the Indian national anthem actually play out at an international motorsport event. Makes your heart feel so, so warm. So it's not just at the Olympics where India is doing quite a good job. But yes, Mahindra winning right there. Also getting a podium in the Saturday race with Alex Lynn as well. So quite a good weekend all around for us.
That's awesome. And you've got a Formula One race coming up this weekend in Hungary. How's that looking? Another sprint weekend?
No, not another sprint weekend. The next time we get that will be at Monza in September. But this one is going to be normal. And this one is going to be an interesting challenge. So I can expand more on that on the Inside Line F1 podcast, which is coming in a few odd days. But to put it simply, there is another big battle between Verstappen and Hamilton impending. Now, Verstappen, he's okay from his big crash at Silverstone. Now, he's more emotional than ever. Now, we might just see the most heated clash between Hamilton and Verstappen for the last 2-3 odd years. This is going to be a blockbuster of a race where strategy is going to be very critical. Only a couple of years ago, Mercedes outsmarted Red Bull in an amazing strategic decision to win here at Hungary. Now, suddenly, Red Bull Racing seemed like the faster car and seemed to have the edge on strategy as well. I'm quite intrigued to see which way this race is going to go all the way around.
Awesome. So for all you listeners out there, I know this is overwhelming. We've got the Olympics, the cricket, a lot of the racing stuff happening, and then there's the 100. So you know where to get your information distilled and where it makes sense. So don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to us right now. And it'll be a wrap for us this week because there's so much more for us to first go find out, watch, and bring back to you. Thank you so much, Ayaz, for taking time out. Continue to enjoy the sport, and we'll catch up with you again next week. Thanks, Somil. Bring us everything you can find from the world of racing, and look forward to having you all join us here again next week. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, Mr. Fantastic.
See you, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.